Markets turn their attention out west. From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. Federal Reserve officials, along with finance ministers and central bankers from all over the world, are headed to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, for their annual banking symposium. Fed Chair Jerome Powell is scheduled to speak tomorrow, with markets watching for any signs of another rate cut. Minutes from the July meeting released yesterday revealed divisions on the Fed over last month's rate cut. Diane Swonk of Grant Thornton is headed to Jackson Hole herself. And Diane, how will those minutes play into what happens at this big meeting?
The bottom line is the July meeting was much more divided than we thought, and there's probably going to be more storm clouds at that meeting than we had anticipated. The chairman will be trying to represent a consensus view of what the next move for the Fed will be, when what we know now is there is no consensus. There's a small majority who wanted a quarter point cut in July. There was two people who wanted a 50 basis point cut to cut even more. And then there was a very large minority who didn't want to do anything and wanted to just stand pat. And that is really hard when you're trying to, you know, provide a summary of a consensus when there is no consensus to be had.
And we also have news that the Bureau of Labor Statistics has revised downward its jobs numbers from last year, showing that we had 500,000 fewer jobs than we thought we did. What does that mean?
It suggests that the tax cuts and federal stimulus that we saw in terms of spending gains really delivered very little. In fact, we lost momentum as we went into the latter part of the year now and as we started 2019. We have to ask ourselves, what did we spend that over $1 trillion in deficit money on, because it's not showing up in the employment data.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this week, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders unveiled a plan to double membership in unions. Several other Democratic candidates are promising similar plans. Union membership in the U.S. has declined dramatically over the last several decades. A new report from the Brookings Institution explores how the decline of organized labor affects all workers. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
During the post-war era, about a third of American workers were members of a union. Today, only 6% belong. The Brookings report analyzed decades of data to determine why, but former New York City iron worker Bill Holfeld has his own theory.
We are victims of our own success.
Right now, union members earn 15 to 20% more than equivalent workers at non-union shops. And as membership has shrunk, wage growth for low and middle-rung workers has stalled and income inequality has grown.
Really, what we think unions are doing is enhancing bargaining power. And if you look at the data, it really does matter.
Jay Shambaugh with the Brookings Institution says the shift from a manufacturing economy to a more service-based economy over the last 30 years can explain some of the losses, but not all of them. He says right-to-work laws, now in place in 28 states, have weakened unions' power, and employers have become more resistant to organizing efforts. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Floodwaters still haven't receded along many stretches of the Missouri and Mississippi rivers in the Midwest, the remnants of catastrophic spring storms. Already, the federal government is estimating billions of dollars in damage, but those costs continue to climb, and it's been difficult to assess the full extent of the damage. Marketplace Hub reporter Peggy Lowe of KCUR reports.
In Atchison County, in the northwest corner of Missouri, Rhonda Wiley and I head out in a pickup.
Emergency management. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Wiley is director of the county's emergency management. We need to clear a checkpoint to get access to U.S. 136, most of which is covered in water. It's been that way since March.
As you can see, there's our soybean pile.
The huge soybean pile, Wiley points out, is on fire. Its tall black plume of smoke can be seen for miles. The 650,000 bushels of surplus soybeans piled outside a commercial grain elevator got soaked by floodwaters. The beans rotted, which creates its own heat. Then that decay, mixed with the summer sun, caused the beans to spontaneously combust. The pile's been burning since mid-July.
It's condensed quite a bit. But it's, it's just kind of like charcoal.
It's also like nothing anyone in the local area has ever seen before. Fire officials decided the safest way to manage it was to just let it burn.
It just keeps burning until it's ashes. So,
the soybeans are owned by Gavilon, a commodity management company based in Omaha. The fire is just the latest chapter in a disaster that has closed roads, ruined homes, and swamped farmland, leaving only sand behind. Missouri Governor Mike Parson says it's difficult to tally all the damages from the floods.
These fields that are out there for farmers have not been cleaned up yet. We still got highway systems that are down. We don't know what that effect is. You got a lot of small towns out there that hadn't been able to do business for months now.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says the cost of rebuilding damaged levees so far, mostly from Omaha south to Kansas City, is nearly $2 billion. Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, R.D. James, told lawmakers during a House committee hearing on Capitol Hill in July that he didn't know when federal funds would land in their districts.
Doggone it, the rivers are still just so high, there's not a lot of work we're going to be able to do.
Emergency management head Rhonda Wiley's facing the same problem in Atchison County.
We're not going to be able to get in there and assess homes and assess damage because there is no way to get there except by plane.
Wiley says she's now seeking up to $5,000 in grant money to buy drones. In Rockport, Missouri, I'm Peggy Lowe for Marketplace.
And in Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.